Track 6, The Escape to Egypt, Jesus' Childhood and the Death of Joseph.
It is not long after the visit of the three magi, and Maria Valtorta describes the scene she sees. It is night. Joseph is sleeping in his little bed in his very small room. He is lying on one side and is smiling at some vision he sees in his dream. But his smile turns into an expression of anxiety. He is now sighing deeply as if he is having a nightmare, and he awakens with a start. He goes towards the door facing the bed and knocks very gently. But Mary is not sleeping. She is kneeling near the cradle with her light dress and is praying, watching Jesus who is sleeping peacefully. Jesus is the same age as I saw him in the vision of the Magi, a child about 1 year old, beautiful, rosy and fair-haired. "Are you not sleeping?" Joseph asks Mary in a low, surprised voice. "Why not? Is Jesus not well?" "Oh, no," says Mary. "He is all right. I am praying. Later I will sleep." "Why have you come, Joseph?" Joseph speaks in a very low voice, lest he should awaken the child, but it is an excited voice. "We must go away from here at once. It must be at once. Prepare the coffer and a sack with everything you can put in them. I'll prepare the rest. I'll take as much as I can. We will flee at dawn. I would go even sooner, but I must speak to the landlady." "But why this flight?" says Mary. "I will tell you later. It's because of Jesus. An angel said to me, 'Take the child and his mother and escape into Egypt. Don't waste any time. I'm going to prepare what I can.'" There is no need to tell Mary not to waste time. As soon as she hears Joseph mention an angel, Jesus, and flight, she understands that her creature is in danger, and she jumps to her feet, holding one hand against her heart, completely distressed. And she begins to move about, quick and agile, laying the clothes in the coffer and in a large sack which she places on her bed, still untouched. Although she is disheartened, she does not lose her head. She acts quickly but orderly. Now and again, when passing near the cradle, she looks at the child who is sleeping calmly. She goes to the cradle and shakes it a little to wake up the baby. But he whimpers a little, turns around and continues to sleep. Mary pats his curls gently. Jesus opens his little mouth, yawning. Mary bends down and kisses his cheek. Then Jesus wakes up completely. He opens his eyes, sees his mother and smiles, and stretches his little hand towards her breast. "Yes, love of your mummy, yes, your milk, before the usual time. But you are always ready to suck your mummy's breast, my little holy lamb." Joseph comes back. "Are you ready? Is Jesus ready? Have you taken his blankets and his little bed? We can't take his cradle, but he must have at least his little mattress. Poor baby, whose death they are seeking." "Joseph!" shouts Mary, while she grasps his arm. "Yes, Mary, his death. Herod wants him dead. Because he is afraid of him, that filthy beast. Because of his human kingdom, he is afraid of this innocent child. Don't cry, Mary. To see you crying is a greater pain for me than having to go into exile. Forgive me, Joseph. I'm not crying for myself or for the few things I'm losing. I'm crying for you. You already have had to sacrifice yourself so much, and now once again you will have no customers, no home. How much I am costing you, Joseph. How much? No, Mary. You do not cost me. You comfort me. Always. Don't worry about the future. We have the gifts of the Magi. They will serve for the first days. Later I will find some work. And what about you? Who will relieve your longing for your home, which is so dear to you? Jesus will. Having him, I have what I had here. And Joseph replies, And I, having Jesus, have my native land, in which I had hope up to some months ago. I have my God. Come, Mary, it is dawning. It is time to say goodbye to our hostess and load our things. Everything will be all right. Mary lifts the child gently, envelops him in a shawl, and clasps him to her heart. She goes out through Joseph's little room into the big room. The landlady, in tears, kisses her goodbye. And lifting the edge of the shawl, she kisses the forehead of the child, who is sleeping calmly. They go down the outside steps. Mary mounts the little donkey while the landlady is holding Jesus in her arms and is kissing him once again. She then hands him back to Mary. Also Joseph mounts after tying his donkey to the one loaded with the goods, in order to be free to hold the reins of Mary's donkey. The flight begins, while Bethlehem, still dreaming of the phantasmagoric scene of the Magi, is sleeping. Then Mary dictates this lesson to Maria Valtorta. She says, Legend loves to make my child a prodigious, unnatural being, who from his birth onwards acted like a man. But I want to speak to you about my child just as he was. His growth was neither more nor less like that of a healthy child cared for by his mother. My child was intelligent, very, as perfect as one can be. But his intelligence awakened day by day, following the rule common to all born of woman. The first glances, no longer indefinite, like those of the first days, began to rest upon things, and especially on his mother. The first smiles were uncertain, and then increasingly certain, when I would bend over his crib and take him onto my lap to give him milk, to wash him, dress him, and kiss him. The first words, confused, and then clearer and clearer. What blessedness to be the mother teaching the Son of God to say mother. And the first time he pronounced this word correctly, which no one ever knew how to say with so much love as he did, was a celebration for me and Joseph. And his first steps on his tender little feet, pink like the petal of a flesh-coloured rose. Those feet, which they would later nail to the cross, and I would see contracting in agony. And his falls, when he started to move on his own. I would run to lift him up again and kiss his bruises. Oh, I could do so then. One day I would see him fall under the cross, and I would no longer be able to run to lift him up again and kiss his bleeding bruises. The poor mother of a poor executed son. And his first acts of attentiveness, a little flower picked in the small garden or along the road and brought to me, a little stool dragged to my feet so that I would be more comfortable, the picking up of an object that I had dropped. And his smile. Whoever has seen my son's smile has seen paradise on earth for everyone. When, moreover, the voice was joined to the smile, it was the voice of God that was speaking, Maria. Jesus' intelligence, more and more open until reaching perfection, aroused my admiration and respect, but it was so tempered with goodness that it never humiliated anyone. My sweet son, you are so gentle to all, and especially to your mother. When Jesus is 12 years old, of age, he goes with Mary and Joseph to the temple in Jerusalem to be examined by the doctors of the law. All who see and hear him are astounded by his wisdom and knowledge. After the ceremonies, Jesus is separated from his parents, and a distraught Mary searches for him in vain. Jesus says to Maria Valtorta, "See Mary's distress when she realized, after the groups of men and women had gathered together, that I was not with Joseph. She does not reproach her spouse, but the pain that appears on Mary's face pierces Joseph's heart more than any bitter reproach. Then, after 3 days, the symbol of 3 other days of future anguish, Mary, exhausted, enters the temple and walks along the yards and the halls. Nothing. She runs, the poor mother, whenever she hears the voice of a child. Even the bleating of the lambs gives her the impression that she hears her creature weeping and looking for her. But Jesus is not weeping, he is teaching. All of a sudden, from beyond the barrier of a large group of people, she hears his voice saying, 'These stones will vibrate.' She endeavours to make her way through the crowd and succeeds after much effort. There is her son standing in the midst of the doctors with his arms stretched out. Mary is the prudent virgin, but this time anxiety overcomes prudence. It is a hurricane that demolishes everything. She runs to her son, embraces him, lifting him off the stool and putting him down on the ground. And she exclaims, 'Oh, why have you done this to us? For 3 days we have been looking for you. Your mummy is dying with pain, son, and your father is exhausted with fatigue. Why, Jesus?' You do not ask why of him who knows, why he behaved in a certain way. You do not ask those with a vocation why they leave everything to follow the voice of God. I was wisdom and I knew. I was called to a mission and I was fulfilling it. Above the earthly father and mother, there is God, the Divine Father. His interests are above ours. His affections are superior to everything else. And I tell my mother. I finish teaching the doctors with a lesson to Mary, the Queen of Doctors, and she has never forgotten it. The sun began to shine again in her heart, now that she had me, humble and obedient, beside her. But my words are deeply rooted in her mind. Great joys and many tears will alternate in her heart during the next 21 years. But never again will she ask, 'My son, why have you done this to us?' and Mary says to Maria. The passage in Luke, "But they did not understand what he had said to them," chapter 2, verse 50, should be interpreted in this way. I understood. I knew even before. And if the Father permitted my anguish as a mother, he did not conceal from me the sublime meaning of the words of my son. But I remained silent so as not to mortify Joseph, to whom the fullness of grace was not granted. When Joseph was no longer at my side, and I was the first earthly authority for my son, I no longer acted as if I did not understand by remaining silent. At Cana I spoke. Do what he tells you, I said. For I knew that Jesus refused me nothing. There was already the first miracle prompted by me and offered to me by my son. It is necessary to know how to read the gospel, Maria. Men do not know how to read it. I will guide your hand and explain it to you, wherever my Jesus does not explain it to you. I am the mother of both of you. I want my girl to know her most sweet Jesus, our Jesus, as few know him. The more you know him, the more you will love him. The more you love him, the happier you will make me. Many years later, Jesus, now an adult, is working at home at a large carpentry bench. Maria Valtorta writes, "Now and again he raises his head and looks towards the southern wall where there is a closed door, and he listens. He then goes back to his work. He is not sad, but very serious. His mother comes in and says, 'Oh, Jesus, come, come, he is very ill.' The words are uttered with trembling lips and with tears shining in Mary's reddened and tired eyes. Jesus says only, 'Mother,' but that word means everything. They go into the adjoining room where there is a low bed covered with small mattresses. On it, leaning on many cushions, there is Joseph. He is dying. It is obvious from the livid paleness of his face, his lifeless eyes, his panting chest, and the total relaxation of all his body. Mary goes to his left-hand side, takes his wrinkled hand, now livid near its nails, rubs it, caresses it, and kisses it. With a small piece of cloth, she dries the perspiration that forms shiny lines at his temples. She wipes a glassy tear in the corner of his eye, and she moistens his lips with a piece of linen dipped into a liquid. Jesus then takes Joseph's hand into his own, and bending over the dying man, he whispers many psalms. His last words to Joseph are, 'Go before me and tell the patriarchs that the Saviour is in the world and the kingdom of heaven will soon be opened to them. Go, Father, may my blessing accompany you.'" Jesus has raised his voice to reach the heart of Joseph, who is sinking into the mists of death. His end is close, and he is panting very painfully. Mary caresses him, and Jesus sits on the edge of the little bed, embraces him, and draws to himself the dying man, who collapses and passes away peacefully. The scene is full of a solemn peace. Jesus lays the patriarch down again and embraces Mary, who, at the last moment, broken-hearted, has gone near Jesus. Jesus says to Maria Valtorta, I exhort all wives who are tortured by pain to imitate Mary in her widowhood, to be united to Jesus. Those who think that Mary's heart did not suffer any afflictions are mistaken. My mother did suffer. Let that be known. She suffered in a holy way because everything in her was holy, but she suffered bitterly. Those who think that Mary did not love Joseph deeply only because he was the spouse of her soul and not of her flesh are also mistaken. Mary did love Joseph deeply, and she devoted 30 years of faithful life to him. Joseph was her father, her spouse, her brother, her friend, her protector. Now she felt as lonely as the shoot of a vine when the tree to which it is tied is cut down. It was as if her house had been struck by thunder and was splitting. Before, it was a unit in which the members supported one another. Now the main wall was missing, a sign of the impending parting of her beloved Jesus. The will of the Eternal Father, who had asked her to be a spouse and a mother, was now imposing upon her widowhood and separation from her creature. But, shedding tears, Mary utters one of her most sublime remarks. Yes, yes, Lord, let it be done to me according to your word. And to have enough strength for that hour, she drew close to me. Mary was always united to God in the gravest hours of her life. In the temple when she was asked to marry, at Nazareth when she was called to maternity, at Nazareth when shedding the tears of a widow, again at Nazareth in the dreadful separation of her son, and on Calvary in the torture of seeing me dying.